Do you know beyond any shadow of a doubt that you are here to do something wonderful with your life? Do you feel that call deep inside you to bring your sacred healing gifts and transformational knowledge to the world around you? Do you want to feel inspired as you build your business doing your beautiful work? Do you want to learn how to build a successful spiritual business? Well then, you're invited to listen in to the Divinely Intuitive Business Radio Show, where we explore how fun and easy it can be to build a strong, abundant business while at the same time staying deeply connected to the divine using your intuition, your own sixth sense. Join the irreverent Reverend Ann Presswell as she and her guests explore the many ways you can build a deeply connected, authentic, powerful spiritual business making money without feeling like you've sold your soul. You are here to get your gifts out to the world in a powerful, abundant way, and your people are waiting for you. Let's help them find you. Now, here's your host, Reverend Ann Presswell.
Well, hello, 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 Divine Ones. It's so great to have you here. I want to welcome you all here to the Divinely Intuitive Business Radio Show. This is Reverend Ann Presswell of DivinelyIntuitiveBusiness.com. And I have a very special guest today who is another minister. We're going to have a really great time. She also calls herself the Irreverent Rev, which is really awesome. So both of us, two of us, man, watch out. But before we get to Reverend Lauren McLaughlin, I want to say a blessing and have you all just sink into your heart, knowing that you are perfect, whole, and complete just the way you are, that your business is perfect, whole, and complete just the way it is, right here, right now. Everything that you have done, everything that you are doing, is exactly right because it has brought you here to this perfect moment of now. Rest in that truth and know that it is so. And so we say thank you. Thank you, thank you, and so it is. All right, today's angel card is the Miracle Mindset angel card. This is so perfect, especially with two reverends. You know, having clarity and having a miracle mindset in your business, in your life, is essential. Like, really understanding that you are co-creator with the divine and that everything that you see around you is a reflection of your beliefs, a reflection of your thoughts, a reflection of your energy, and a reflection of the things that you are saying out loud to the world around you, to people around you. So, today's angel card, the Miracle Mindset, says, I have what I need inside me to create a stunningly successful business. I trust and I am divinely guided. That, my dear friends, is exactly the truth. You are always divinely guided. Hands down, no matter what, you are divinely guided. It is up to you to check in and find it and to connect with it. And to listen, to get quiet enough so that you can hear that still small voice within. I want to say hello to Elizabeth, who is my wonderful producer. Hello, Elizabeth.
Hello, Reverend Dan, and hello, Lauren. I'm really excited about today's show, and I've been reading Lauren's book. I've not finished it. Sorry, Lauren. But it's fabulous.
Fabulous.
Yes. Okay.
Yes.
Looking forward to the show.
Thank you. Thank you, Elizabeth. So Reverend Lauren McLaughlin is a team of thousands of teachers on the planet whose purpose is to help remind those who are ready to remember and want to remember that they are deeply and dearly loved by the Creator and the Sustainer of all life. That the answers to the most important questions that they have are carefully stored in their own hearts. They're not outside of us, sweet ones. They're inside. And that they have deliberately chosen the human experience, frankly, for the sheer fun of it. Sorry, it ain't so much fun sometimes, but okay. We'll have a fun conversation about that. Lauren is an ordained Unity minister. She's a writer, a speaker, a retreat facilitator, and she is the author of her book, Go to Elf, which we're going to talk about today, too. She's living her happily ever after with her beautiful husband, John, in Clearwater, Florida. So we've got two, we're on opposite sides of the state, of the state of Florida, and we are anchoring the energies here in South Florida, along with others, or in Florida, I should say, along with others. So, Lauren, we've been Facebook friends, actually, with each other for a few years, and we've talked on the phone a couple times. Lauren and I really like each other. We hang out a lot on Facebook, although we've never met in person, which is kind of an interesting thing, given that we both live in Florida. But frankly, she's like 6 hours from me, so... You know, I don't get over to Clearwater very often. Lauren, welcome. Welcome, welcome.
Welcome. I think most people don't realize how big Florida is and how far away you can be and still be in the same state. So
yeah, no kidding.
I keep hoping you're going to come over to your husband's alma mater and visit him, you know,
right?
And visit me at the same time.
Exactly. At some point we will. We did come over one time. It was a long time ago. After you had posted about the St. Michael...
Shrine. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the shrine. And we came over, but it was such a short trip. It was such a short and quick trip. You know, it was like it was kind of funny because the University of South Florida was closed, or the bookstore or something was closed that day. I was like, really? Why? You know, so we didn't even really get to see. I got to see where he lived when he was there as a, you know, graduate student and, you know, all of that. I got to see what it was like. A little bit, but it's a beautiful, beautiful area of Florida.
Well, it's the Gulf Coast, which is, I lived on the East Coast, lived not in Miami, but Fort Lauderdale, and loved it there. But when I had a child to raise, it was a little less hectic over here. And he could go down to the Gulf and fish and see the big birds. And so we thought we'd make this home, and we've been very happy here.
You know, the energy on the West Coast is much less hectic than it is on the East Coast. No question about it. Absolutely. I remember
my theme is life doesn't have to be so hard, I think this suits me better.
I should follow in your footsteps over there, but I don't want to live on the West Coast either. I want to go back north. Anyway, although it's beautiful here, and I'm very blessed, and it's a beautiful, beautiful area. So let's get talking about life doesn't have to be so hard. I love that wonderful little intro there. You know, why do you think that, I mean, I have my own my own thoughts about it, but why do you think people think that life is so hard? You know, like, what do you think it is about life that makes it so hard?
Well, the first thing is that we're almost always trying to do it the hard way. We're doing it from a purely human standpoint, forgetting that the human part of us is really the smallest part of us, and that the power and knowledge and wisdom and clear direction is internal. So if we're not turning in for information like we would to our GPS system when we want to go somewhere, we're like taking off without a map. And often we stumble and go in the wrong direction and have to backtrack and do it all over again because we didn't ask for directions in the first place. So that's the first reason. And the second is that we get caught up in, I think, intoxicated by life itself and start running around putting out fires, you know, based on what's happening in front of us right at the moment, without realizing that we really could do a better pre-planning job. We could work a little better at attracting the people who are going to help us instead of those that are going to get in our way. And so we just don't do it the easy way. We didn't come with instructions, or at least we don't remember them. And so we bumble through. When if we stop and think about it and do a little bit of studying of what other people have discovered, it could be much easier.
Okay, so this is really great because I'm thinking about a couple of things that you said, which I think are so important. One is that we're bumbling around and we're just putting out fires, right? And I can mm-hmm. see that, like in your business, that's so frequent. You're constantly putting out fires. So I think that the only way to really step back from that is to go into some, what I call serious sacred self-care, radical self-care, divine self-care, whatever you want to call it, to be able to sort of step away, you know, just step on back, right, and disconnect from those fires as much as you can, which isn't always easy. It just isn't. You know, like you have to make a choice. Okay, I'm going to go take care. But if you don't even have that knowledge or that awareness, and all your this was me years ago, like always putting out fires, always running around and trying to resolve things. Like, how do you get from always doing that to recognizing that there's another way?
Well, you have to decide to. First of all, you have to wake up to the fact that you can. Most people just have absolutely no idea. I like to say that we are individual expressions of God, that we have direct connection to God, and that we have at our fingertips all of the power and wisdom that God has available. We are not all of God, but God is all of us. And so if we simply go to that resource for what I would call three main things, for our security, for our direction, and for our livelihood, our ability to provide for ourselves or to allow the universe to provide for us, whichever mindset you happen to be in, then everything would be so much easier. But we don't know that we can do that, or most people don't. I certainly didn't for the first 50 years of my life. Had absolutely no concept that I was connected to all of this resource, this huge channel of information and of support. So without it, we just do the best we can. And you can live your whole life without ever even knowing it.
Yeah,
but
true.
Once you wake up to it, then learning how to access it takes some talking to people who've had experience with it. Over 30 years or so, I have developed a number of tools that I use to do that, and seven of them are, or six of them, once you have the awakening process, are described in the book I wrote, but they're also in classes I teach. They're in the entrepreneurial stuff that you teach. We give people help every day if they are willing and interested in receiving it.
You know, I love that you said that. I thank you, thank you, thank you. And I have a couple questions I want to ask you about your own journey with this, and we'll get into the book, I promise, because I want everybody to know about it. But first, what I think all the time, that the information, and we are totally in the information age, right, which is wonderful. It's available everywhere. That, and the state of Florida, and I will just say this, I was blown away by the library system down here. It was unlike any place I'd ever lived. It was amazing and wonderful and, you know, plentiful and abundant. And seriously, maybe not everybody has the quality of library system that we have here, but you do have access to very inexpensive mentors and trainings by books and books on tape. And, you know, like we can completely transform our whole inner world without a lot of cost, outward cost, by choosing, you know, to access that information somewhere. You know, but you have to, again, you have to choose to go find it. And, I mean, just think of the YouTube right now. You could go probably access, you know, all kinds of, you know, how
well, you can
and transform and how to move this and how to change that. I mean, it's just the plentifulness, the abundance is astonishing. So what you said was they have to be aware that they can, you know, they have to wake up. What happened for you around age 50 that had you wake up? Like, what was your transformation on that?
The wake up for me was very interesting. It happened around age 40, the first wake up. I was driving along, and I was raised in the Catholic tradition, left it when I was 20 because I was horrified that they blamed little children for eating meat on Friday. So that was my big wake up in college. I did go back to get married and had my child baptized a Catholic, but I never was a practicing Catholic after about 20. And so then I got married, and my husband and I tried the Unitarian Church, which is a very interesting intellectual approach to Christianity, which we enjoyed very much when we were in it.
Yes.
But I fell away from that, and in the years my child was a teenager, we didn't do any religion at all. And I was driving along, the radio was on, and some program came on that actually said, do you realize that you have a direct connection to God, that you do not need to go through any religious resource to talk to God, that you are, and the guy actually said, you are a God. And I slammed the radio off for that blasphemy that I just simply couldn't tolerate. Now, however, I never forgot it. You know, it opened my mind, is what I'm saying.
That was
and
a seed that got planted.
In a half a second. And it would keep coming back and think, what if he was right? What if? What if he was right? And then that's all it took in, because then the universe began to point me in the direction of meeting people who had the different kind of approach to life, that we are extensions of God, which the Bible says. It's all, you know, there's nothing that's not in the old teachings that we're talking about now. We're just voicing them in different language. However, I did begin to meet people who were interested in metaphysics, who had other things to say, who introduced me to authors, as you say, and whatever. And frankly, anybody who has a Kindle, which is the most low-tech of the tech equipment, has access to the Library of Congress. So anything they want, everything that's in there is available if they start to seek. But they will be led. They'll be led with great big billboards and flashing signs, and people will give them books, and they'll run into people that they're interested in talking to. And once you let the universe know you're open to hear, you simply hear.
I agree. Yeah, 100%. You heard. You know, it was like it was around you all the time, right? But suddenly, on that drive, you were open enough. You were probably not thinking of anything. You're just driving along, maybe enjoying the view. Maybe you just thought, you know, oh, you know, the sky's so beautiful.
I probably was admiring the beauty of the universe at the time.
Yes.
You know, I must have been open in some way to that.
Exactly.
But then by the time I was 50, which was what you asked about, I was actually attending a Unity Church, taking classes, reading books, listening to tapes and CDs. I married a man who was equally interested in these things. And when I was about mid-50s, he said he thought he would like to go back and become a Unity minister. And I went to Unity Village with him while he was in training, got a really strong calling while I was there, and then attended seminary myself. So I was 59 years old when I was ordained. I started a whole new way of life of bringing this information in many ways to other people way at an advanced stage. There's no limit on waking up. You can be as slow or as quick as you like. So.
I have goosebumps. I'm just so in awe. Did you minister then?
We ministered
Florida?
In Missouri for 7 years, and here in Florida in 3 in a live church ministry.
Mm-hmm.
But we're really born teachers, and church takes up a lot of your time with a lot of things that are not teaching and instructing and continuing your own spiritual learning and awakening. So we left the second church and started an internet ministry where we are constantly teaching in one form or another, books, magazines, classes, speeches, all the ways that you can contact people.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. You know, when I went to seminary too, I have never yet felt guided to lead a church. I always wanted the ordination, wanted the experience, number one. Number two, I wanted the training. The interfaith training was very interesting, you know, because we took different faiths and really delved into them that first year. And the second year was all about rituals and learning to hold the energy and learning how to manage a ritual, how to create rituals for all of the different sacred experiences that we have, the sacred transitions that we have in our lives. And then it was culminated. We had two retreats each year, and it was culminated by a, you know, incredibly powerful ordination. I'm sure that yours was as well. Like, it's just life.
It was. And yeah. My husband came into ministry out of a very strong real estate career and a good business sense. And so when we did church, we did it as church growth ministers.
Mm-hmm.
And we took two churches that were ready to close for various reasons, old standing churches that had run into many kinds of difficulties, and restored them fiscally and physically and spiritually to full strength. But
wow.
That's exhausting.
Yes.
So, and it took away from the other part of what we wanted to do, which was to share the knowledge of the awakening that had come to us and meant so much, hoping we would begin to reach people a little earlier on than we did.
Right.
Although we think our audience is really the baby boomers who are just slightly younger and who for the first time are stopped being so busy with everyday life that they are ready to explore their spiritual nature but don't really know how. So here we are for what John calls the transition team of people who want to go from doing life the hard way to doing it not only more easily, but much more joyfully.
Let's talk about the doing life the easier way, you know, like not, let's give people some real tangible pieces.
Okay, well, you're right at the right season, because Christmas time is a time when we encumber ourselves with thousands of old have-tos that if we took 5 minutes to examine them, we would realize we don't want to do, we don't enjoy doing, and we don't get any satisfaction out of anymore, but we always have done it.
Give an example.
And either our mother or our children expect us to continue doing it.
Give an example.
And, well, Christmas cards might be one. buying.
You mean I'm not
going to
get a Christmas card from you? Seriously?
probably not, unless it's electronic. Christmas card. Now, if you thoroughly enjoy signing your name to 200 pieces of cardboard every year and wondering if they're still alive,
no.
That's,
I mean, I do.
Or even writing a little note that over and over and over again that says, "We had a wonderful year. Hope you did too." if that serves you, fine. But if you're getting so you just dread it, mm-hmm. and the price of the cards has gotten to be something that just makes you shiver, stop it. I had an uncle who was a bachelor. I loved his system. He bought a small box of cards, a stack of stamps, and put them on his desk. And when he got a card, he sent a card. If he didn't, you didn't send him one, you didn't get one. And at least he didn't have to have a list and wonder if they're still there. You know, he knew they were. So
funny.
That was
I have
his
the
system.
Fantasy of doing cards, right? I do. I really do. I have the fantasy of it, but the reality just doesn't
right.
seem to
sure.
manifest. But,
and then buying presents for everybody in the office, people you don't even like.
Yeah.
People who, but they're going to buy you one. Or going to the Christmas party you don't want to go to, or giving the Christmas party you don't want to give. And I don't know about you, but when I counsel people pre-marriage,
uh-huh.
one of the things I ask is, do you open your Christmas presents at night or in the morning?
Oh, that's
they
a
find
good...
find out they do it differently, and each
yeah,
one
yeah.
thinks it's got to be my way.
Yeah. And, well, imagine like when I went to Mexico with Francisco for the first time, right? And they're like, okay, we're going to do Christmas at midnight on Christmas Eve. leave. We go to church, and then we go gather at someone's house, and we stay up until 4 o'clock in the morning. I'm like, what are you nuts?
I don't know. They got to sleep in the next morning. I think maybe they didn't have a bad system.
And I'm like, oh, my God, my butt was dragging, you know. Yeah. But it's, you know, there's, and they are a very celebratory culture. You know, they
sure.
come together, and there's a party, you know, it's a gathering. I shouldn't call it a party, but it's like everybody comes together. Like in the U.S., you know, if you get together with your family once a year for a meal, you know, but they, it's like they take turns at everybody's house for 2 weeks. And it's, I was like exhausted when I got home. It was wonderful. It was delightful and all of that, but it was also like way stimulation,
So if you say to the bride and groom, are you going for Christmas dinner at his mother's house or your mother's house? And they both say mine.
It's like,
so you might want to resolve this before Christmas, because this is the first time the ice water is going to fall on your marriage, and it's going to make you unhappy. The point is that we have what I call in the book, we build boxes.
Okay.
We build boxes around a procedure, around a way of thinking, around a political decision, around a favorite football team. And then we don't allow anybody else to have a different opinion without getting upset. That's making life hard.
Because
people are going to have different ways of doing things. And you're
well, how dare they? I mean, come on.
Yeah. And compromise doesn't please anybody. So you have to learn to cooperate.
Yeah. Okay. So, all right. So what I'm hearing is taking a look at your have-tos right now. And this would, I want to just apply this to business for a minute, because this, of course, is Divinely Intuitive Business Radio Show. So what are your have-tos in your business? And some of them, I'm sorry, you still have to. You have to pay.
Yes.
You know, you have to pay your bills. You have to, you know, do your taxes. You have to file
well,
your.
Wait. You have to do them, or you have to allow them to be done.
Or allow them.
In other words, if it's something you hate, you can delegate it.
Yeah, as much as you can. And some people I know can't delegate right yet, but they're, you know, we hear all the time people going, oh, I just really want to, you know, outsource my social media or outsource, you know, some of the other.
Well, they might be able to barter it.
Yeah, they could. Yeah, absolutely.
If you absolutely hate doing something, you have to change something or you have to grit your teeth. Gritting your teeth is the hard way. Another way is to simply go inside and say, okay, what's the solution? So a woman comes along and says, I wish I could just do social media all the time, but I absolutely hate doing this or such. And you say, oh, thank you, universe. You sent me this person. Because I don't mind doing what she doesn't like, and she doesn't mind doing what I don't like.
There you go.
Let's make a deal.
Yeah.
But the resource is there, because in all of the people on the planet, there is somebody who likes to do what you don't like to do.
Yeah, so it's about asking.
Yes.
And being open.
Constantly.
Constantly.
For the tiniest little thing.
Okay, all right, wait. I love that, and I was having a conversation with someone yesterday and whining about something, and so she said, well, what does your guidance tell you? Of course.
I forgot to ask.
The guidance was saying, ask. I'm like, wait a minute. No, I am asking. But I was like, no, you're not. So that was an interesting, you know, so you just said, ask about the smallest little thing.
The smallest little thing.
Give me an example of the smallest little thing.
Well,
obviously, I need to strengthen my asking.
Well, my husband and I constantly make little deals. I don't like to go to the grocery store, so he goes to the grocery store. He doesn't like to do something else, and I do it for him.
Yeah.
You know, if I just absolutely have to grit my teeth every time I'm going to get in the car and go to the grocery store, and he says, I really don't mind that, but I absolutely do not want to list, because he's got a whole list of them.
Right.
I say, fine, I don't mind picking up a few of those. They don't bother me a bit.
Right.
You know, I'll call so-and-so for you. I'll make this, I'll pay this, these bills. I'll do whatever. Please go to the grocery store.
Right.
So in your own family, in your own business, in your own office, the problem with an entrepreneur is they're often the one, the only one.
Absolutely.
And so they really have to be creative. about not doing, or they have to look at the payoff. For instance, I don't like to wash dishes, but I like to eat off of clean dishes. Now, I have a choice there. I can throw the dishes out every time and buy new ones.
Oh.
I can eat off of paper plates. Oh. I can get somebody else to wash the dishes, or I can say, you know, the payoff here is fine. It takes me 2 minutes to put them in the dishwasher, and then they're nice and clean when I want to make a sandwich.
Right.
So what you do is you stop resisting, and you start cooperating with the situation in any way you can.
I love that. You know, speaking of the dishes, like my daughter and I, like, it's kind of interesting. I will hand wash things because I don't want to put them in the dishwasher for whatever reason. You know, not everything, but some things, you know, like they're too big or whatever. And she said, no, I don't like washing dishes. So I only get things that I can stick in the dishwasher, period. That's it. It's just like, wow, you can do that?
Sure.
You know, I love
she's
it.
Very
I love
sensible
it.
Girl.
Right. Yeah, she's very. She's got a good head on her. Always has. Okay, so let's talk about your book. I want to hear about your book. I've got your book. I think it's wonderful, as you well know. And, you know, and I want other people to, you know, let me just say this. When I first started down my path of awakening years ago, because I was a Unity person too. Like, I went to Unity, and that was, let me share this little story. So a friend of mine invited me to Unity Church. And I was like, I don't know. You know, my daughter was little at the time. I don't know. Okay, fine, I'll come. Because I really liked her. So I went. And they stood there and they sang Out of the Wings of Song hymnal. All of these songs that I had learned growing up that I really loved, because music really always touched me. It just always got me in my heart. And they were singing these songs that were reworded from... words like sinner and, you know, all the, you know, the blood of Jesus and, you know, all that. You know what I mean.
They call it unitizing them.
Yes, they unitize the songs. And I was like, oh, it's the most incredible thing I've ever heard or seen or what. I was sold. I was just done. And then, of course, people came up to me to hug me. And I'm like, whoa, go away. What are you doing? Like, I couldn't get out of the room fast enough. I so remember that. But then I warmed up to it all, and I loved the hugs, you know. But I just remember in the beginning, I was like, what? Why are these people coming to me with these open arms and wanting to hug me? I'm like, oh, it was so funny. Anyway.
Well, that happens a lot. We have to have a non-hugging section for people who simply won't tolerate it. But it is a Unity thing.
It is totally a Unity thing. And now, of course, I sign off everything on hugs, you know, like hugs and, you know, all of that. but the transformation began there, because I started to sing songs. And I remember, you know, I started reading all of these books, you know, the Florence Scovel Shinn books and the Catherine Ponder books and the, you know, Eric Butterworth and, you know, all of these other books that were just transformational for me. And I totally forgot what my point was on that. But, oh, I know what it was. The books that I really, really loved were books like Go to Elf. They were stories.
Stories, yeah.
Were
stories. Well, I had started to write a self-help book 3 or 4 or 5 times, and I would get about 8 or 10 chapters in and think, you know, this has been done before. And even though I have a little twist on it, I just don't think the world needs another one of these. And I could not seem to make my points without making them dry. And then one day I heard myself in a class saying, you know, the best teachers in the world were the great storytellers. And this little arrow shot through and said, are you listening, Lauren? So never had written a novel before, and now have combined it to both a novel and a self-help book. But I sat down to do it, but first I spoke with my angel guides, particularly Michael, St. Michael, who said, don't worry about it, I'll write it for you. And he pretty much did. It was pretty inspired. I started this first of 3 books on the 1st of February, and I finished it at the end of March. So it was less than 60 days in the writing from 21 chapters and a prologue, I mean an epilogue. So it, you know, sort of poured through me. But it includes the tools that I had gathered over those 30 years that really are helpful to people who are waking up and want to know how to handle it and would do so better by watching someone else do it. As they watch the characters in Go
yep.
to Elf have their awakening, they begin to see their own. And we have, you know, dozens of people who've written and said that I, you know, really came into myself reading this book.
Wow.
Now, this is the primer. This one works in terms of ABC and 1, 2, 3. The next two books will be a little bit more complex. But because as you grow spiritually, you're open to bigger ideas. But basically, the things you need to know are very, very simple.
Mm-hmm. I love the stories that guide you, and I love what you said, is watching the characters and learning, watching them evolve and open up and step into the spiritual truths. And I think that that's one of the things that I love so much about, you know, whether it's, you know, a TV show or whether it's a movie or whether it's another book like that, it's the... the identification with the characters. Like one of the things I'll say to Francisco, for example, if we're watching something, if I don't like the characters, I'm out of there. I can't,
mm-hmm.
you know, like I'm like, eh. I won't torture myself and go, well, what do you have to learn here, Anne? I'm just like, nah, I'm not going to. I'm going to make my life easy and enjoy what I watch. You know, if I'm going to spend time
sure.
watching, I need to, you know, anyway. So that is, I think, such a valuable point in a novel and storytelling. It allows someone to step into that space with them, no matter what it is. You know?
Yeah, the person who I thought expressed it so well said to me, I wish these people lived next door.
Aww.
And I thought, you can't get higher compliment than that. Because the person who lives next door can be either a great blessing or a terrible burden. Or someone you never see.
That's really.
And this one wanted to communicate with these characters all the time, which seemed to me like a really good way to say you did a good job here for me.
Yeah. Well, so I want to talk about the process. I know you said you'd started it in 1 month and finished it the next. I'm like, wow, that's mm-hmm. pretty impressive. What did you just have it download to you and you sat at the computer and just typed and just
watched? Well, you know, in it is much of me. There are stories that I've used that have actually happened to me. There are people, things that have happened to people I've known. There are smart aleck things my own children said, you know. So it wasn't totally downloaded, but I would sit at the computer and talk to Michael first and say, okay, where are we going with this today? Because when you write a novel and you create a person, and I created a dozen people, they have personalities, they have histories, they have hang-ups, they have joys, they have hurts, they have loves, they have all these big emotions, and you really live with these characters. And I think the most telling thing of that is that one night my husband said to me, are we in bed alone or is Tony in here with us? Because I was so wrapped up in the guy I was creating that John was feeling a little bit of jealousy here.
That's funny. That's horrible.
I thought that was darling. I said, you know, I think he is, but if you don't mind, I'll put him outside the door for a while.
Well, you know, energetically, it's true. He's right.
Yeah.
No, that's how intuitive he is. He was picking up on, you know, that character being...
I wasn't entirely tuned into him at the time. But he was amused when he said it. I John was nothing but 1,000% supportive of my doing this in every way, including serving technical advisor. I have to say he never advised any on the spiritual teachings, but where I would have the alleys going the wrong way, because you have to set this geographically too. And I did happen to read somewhere that if you're going to write a novel, put it somewhere where you already know whether to turn left or right or go north or south. But I did have the alleys going the wrong way in St. Petersburg. At one point, this is a very metro social group, and I had him using a Rolodex, and John said, "Lauren, no one has used a Rolodex for 20 years."
a Rolodex.
He was a good technical advisor, but he didn't.
I love that.
And with humor, I might say, but he didn't ever try to get into the writing of the book. But he listened to it chapter by chapter with great appreciation and was very supportive, even if he did have to compete with the characters for 2 months.
I love that. So tell us what the seven concepts, the elf.
Okay, well, let's identify
the elf is, because, you know, some
the
people
elf
are like,
is the eternal life force. There's a story of how that came about. My calling, if you're going to have a calling or a purpose in life, I learned a number of years ago, was to remind people that God loves them. And I used to put it everywhere. I signed everything, God loves you and so do I, signed off all my Sunday talks that way, my emails, and I had it on my telephone. And the telephone message would end, just always remember, God loves you and so do I. And people would argue back with the recording. They would say, oh, I hope you're right, or wouldn't that be nice, or I wish I could believe that. I mean, they're talking to a telephone.
Yeah.
And I realized that many people have almost a love-hate relationship with God. They can believe that they can love God, but they really can't believe God can love them. So I went back to Spirit and said, should I give this message to everybody, or is it just annoying to some people, or is it only for some people? And the guidance I got was, find another name for me. So I was working with the concept of eternity and with life, which I thought were the two things that people, if they really understood that God was forever and a part of, very much a part of their life, that that would be a good thing. But eternal life didn't seem to have any energy behind it, not enough to satisfy me anyway. So I said to John, well, I've got this eternal life thing, and it seems to me there should be something else. And he said, well, it may seem superfluous, but I always loved the Star Wars stuff. The force is with you, that God is this force, this energy force that is there. And as soon as he said it, ELF, I realized that the elf is in yourself, three-quarters of yourself, three-quarters of myself, himself, herself, etc. It's the biggest part of us. It's the spiritual center of us. And you can call it your inner being or your higher self or your soul, but it is the part of you that doesn't show but is much greater than your human self, which by comparison, while very miraculous, is much smaller. So that was where the elf came from, that the eternal life force is the main creator and sustainer of all life, and it shoots up these little individuations of itself, which have both a non-physical and a physical component.
Wow.
So the center part, the soul part, is what I call the elf.
Okay, that makes sense. And there are seven concepts that you teach.
They also came from Spirit. They're part of my long teaching, but they really were spiritual teachings. The first one, of course, is that you are the elf in yourself, that you are both the human and spiritual component. The second is about the boxes that I taught about. We cause our own problems by building those boxes. The third is that the elf really was, or Michael or whoever my guide was in writing this, were so clear that we came here to have a good time. That this is in effect, in the book I talk about it, and the elf talks about it and compares it to Disney World. That you can go to Disney World and you can visit anything you want there. You can go to Pioneer Land, you can go to Future Land, you can be in the present, you can ride the rides, you can have tea with Mickey, you can have all of the components of what all kinds of people like to do. And then when you're through, you just drive away. And so life is not any more serious than that. You came here to have a good time, and if you're not having one, then you're not doing what you came to do. You may have other things. You may consider mountain climbing a good time, or you may consider napping in a hammock a good time, but whatever you consider to be fun, that's what you need to be doing.
That's pretty huge.
Yeah, it is, because it's everything, the antithesis of everything we were taught. Life is serious, don't you understand? Money doesn't grow on trees. You only get what you work for. If you aren't good, Santa Claus won't bring you presents. If you're not good, you'll go to hell. None of that. I mean, you don't have to be bad to have fun. You can have fun and be very good. So that was one of the big realizations that came to me, has come to me through my whole ministry. What? Happy people are lucky. My husband always says the expression isn't get lucky, be happy. It's be happy, get lucky.
Okay, so let's talk about that for a minute. Let's talk about how to help someone move from not fun to fun. Like,
okay.
How they actually
can't do it in one step.
Yeah, thank you. Right?
You can't do it in one step. It's a process, and it's a process where you have to have an intention to even feel a little bit better, just a tiny bit better than you do right now.
Okay.
And then a tiny bit more and a tiny bit more and a tiny bit more. And there is a little, it isn't in the book, but it will be in the next book, a little exercise that can show you how to do that. If you stand perfectly still in one place and look ahead of you, you can describe everything that's going on there. And it may be something perfectly terrible. You know, you've just lost a loved one, you've just lost your job, your house has been foreclosed upon. All of the bills are in front of you on the desk. The bill collectors are calling. The phone's ringing. Your children are crying. But if you stand up and turn one quarter turn in the other direction and describe what's in front of you right then, none of those first things will be there. There will be other things, but they'll be different things. So you shift your attention just one quarter turn, either physically or mentally, and it relieves you of the weight of what you have been looking at. And the minute you're relieved of that weight, you can start to make more informed decisions. If you keep staring into the darkness, you will only see the darkness.
That's really powerful. Okay.
So it's a simple thing to think about turning half a turn.
Yes, I completely get that. How do you help them with their inner thoughts? And we're talking about somebody who's like in, you know, massive pain. Let's talk about someone who's not quite in so much pain, but just a little less, but they've sort of gotten into the point of, you know, life is, I don't want to say a struggle or business is a struggle, but let's talk about like they've so focused in one area that they've completely forgotten to access the fun or the
joy,
right?
What I think in one of the other concepts is that the best tool you have in your spiritual tool belt is gratitude. So if you can even think of three things to be grateful for, and you can start with I can see, I can hear, I can smell, I can taste, I can touch. You know, if somebody may be missing one of those or even two, but they've got some of them.
Yeah.
I can walk, or I can talk, or I can hear, or I can comfort, or I can. There are all sorts of reasons to be grateful, and just a few of them are like pivoting. They take your focus off of what is wrong onto what is right.
Okay.
One of the more interesting authors, I can't remember which one, said, "Give thanks for the parts of your body that are working."
My gosh.
Don't focus on the ones that aren't working.
Right.
Focus on the ones that are.
Here's a little example of that. Like you go to the bathroom and it feels so good. Say thanks. Body's working. You know, your kidneys
That's
are working.
True.
Your, you know, intestines.
Oh, huge amounts of you are working without you doing anything about
you,
it. The elf
right?
says,
without
you know,
even
I
thinking about it, right?
Yeah,
and
the elf says, I breathe you.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree with you, even when you're not thinking about it. I'm here. I'm doing all this for you.
Exactly.
You have me all the time. I am you and you are me, and you have me all the time. So sitting with someone and just letting them rave and rant until they get it out, and then I always say you can't send them a Hallmark card. You know, you can't say it's a lovely day and you should be in a happy place. You can say, what's one thing we can do that would make you feel good? Well, it might make me feel good to take a hot shower. It might make me feel good to take a walk. It might make me feel good if you drove me downtown and bought me an ice cream cone. You know, whatever it is, do something that makes you feel better. And what that does is lift the heaviness. And when the weight goes off, then you can think, well, maybe I could do one more thing that feels good. Or maybe I could look at this in a different way. I could reframe it. Sometimes you can reframe things for people.
I love that. Excuse me. What is one thing I can do that will make me feel good?
Mm-hmm.
That's about shifting it out of in that moment. How about just, how do you begin to change that into a habitual way of doing? So it's not just a one time, okay, now I feel better, but you know, you forget. I can remember, I would forget. I forgot. And then I remembered, then I remembered, then I forgot, then I remembered, you know, back and forth, until it became more of a habit to do those things, right? To not send out the Christmas cards.
I have a feeling I've changed things in your household this year. Well, the elf would say that you need to remember that the elf is always talking to you. And so if you're not feeling good, and let's say if you are feeling good, if what you're doing is making you happy and making you feel lighthearted and making you feel, or even just neutral, then you're doing okay. But if you feel any kind of bad, sad, mad, guilty, jealous, greedy, envious, exhausted, any kind of bad, it is your inner being telling you you're not going in a direction that's working for you. You're not doing what your soul wants you to do. And so one thing you can do is just stop. Just stop and say, for a moment, I'm not going to do anything. And then I'm going to do something that does make me feel better. Whatever that may be, it may be so simple. If you stand still and look up at the ceiling and smile, you will feel better. You know, Louise Hay, who's one of my favorite authors, says you can't be grateful and unhappy at the same time. You can't be smile and be miserable at the same time. If you're just give yourself to it, if you really do smile, if you really do feel grateful, if you really do some act of kindness, come out of yourself over into some other place, you're going to begin to feel better. And that's your inner being saying, okay, this is a better direction for you.
You know, I think that's the key right there. It's moving out of yourself and into a different awareness of yourself, like this awareness of yourself in one way, and then moving out of that into a different awareness. So mm-hmm. whether that's, you know, smiling at the ceiling or going and smiling at yourself in the bathroom mirror, going taking a shower, going and, you know, going for a walk to your mailbox even, you know, going and, you know, breathing in the fresh air, some way to get out of your head into your body just a little bit, mm-hmm. just a little bit, and that will shift the energies of it. It may not take care of the problem, like you might still have the house being foreclosed on, but
right.
it will help you feel differently as you're walking through the problem. It may actually help you find a resolution. Elizabeth sent me a quickie note that says, we want to make sure that you get to your gift. So before we go too much further, let's tell everybody you have a gift for them.
Well, they may read the first 6 chapters of The Elf free
mm-hmm.
by going to the website, which is www.gotoelf.com. And I would also offer your listeners, if they wish to email me or you, if you like, I will send you the piece that you could send out to them that gives them the 12 affirmations, which are part of the ELF's teachings. They all are divinely inspired. They're spiritual awakening affirmations.
Right.
And the exercise is to say, there are 12 of them, they're called the 12-12-12, 12 affirmations 12 times a day for 12 weeks, will make a considerable difference in anyone's feeling about themselves. They're very powerful. So if you want the 12 affirmations, if you like, I'll send you an article that you can send out to your listeners, or they can email me directly, whichever you
like. Let them email you directly.
And okay.
Where can they email you directly?
At GodBless@ and it's TampaBay.rr.com. That is the Roadrunner ending, TampaBay.rr.com. And just put affirmations, and I will send you the article about them and how to use them.
Oh, that's wonderful. Yeah, that's wonderful. And, you know, I'm such a big believer in the affirmations. We will definitely be posting that on the Blog Talk Radio page, as well as on the Divinely Intuitive Business page in Facebook. And, you know, we'll have that information available. And we'll also have it, I think, I don't know, Elizabeth, do we post that on the Divinely Intuitive Business page in, you know, on the website itself or just in the Facebook?
Yes, we do. We post it on social media and also on the Blog Talk Radio website.
Okay, but not on the Divinely Intuitive Business page website itself, DIB website?
No.
Okay, perfect. But there, you know, there's information on the website. Anyway, it doesn't matter. That is a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful gift. You will be able to get access to the first six chapters of Go to ELF at gotoelf.com. And if you email Lauren, you'll be able to get the information on the affirmations as well as affirmations themselves at godbless@tampabay.rr.com. Really brilliant. I know that affirmations transformed my life. When I first read about them,
the
power of them, I was astonished. And I so believe in affirmations. And I have affirmations all over the place on my website, actually in my store, the Divinely Intuitive Business store, with affirmations for entrepreneurs, because nobody has spiritual affirmations for entrepreneurs. At least I didn't see any. And I just think they're so, so, so important, because our mindset is hands down one of the biggest challenges that we have, which is why the Miracle Mindset Angel card came up today. And if you actually can access and shift the way you, and I'll tell you, sometimes you'll think you're lying when, sometimes when I will, you know, say affirmations, I'm like, man, I am lying here. You know, I'll do some tapping or I'll do some, you know, something to just get myself a little bit more in alignment with what I'm affirming. But I know that the whole process of affirmations is that you state where you want to be, and then there's that gap between where you are and where you want to be. And part of your work is to, you know, make friends with the gap and to move through that gap so that you are in alignment with what you're saying. And it does happen. Oh, my goodness, I can tell you story after story, I'm sure you can too, of how affirmations work and how powerful they are.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. Elizabeth, how much time do we have? Just checking.
We're ready to go to the blessing now, please, Reverend Dan.
All right. Thank you very much. That she's so great. She keeps me on track. Lauren.
Me too.
Right? Reverend Lauren McLaughlin, thank you so much for being here with us today. I am so grateful for you. I'm grateful for your friendship, and I'm grateful for this time that we've had. I really am. Thank you. All right, everyone.
Well, I had a wonderful time, so thank you for having me.
Yay! Good. All right. Everyone, nice deep breath in. Know that you are here to bring your beautiful sacred gifts out to the world, and that part of doing so is about creating that space within yourself, connecting deeply with the divine within yourself, so that you can be that light that you already are, but to uncover it. Take the bushel out, You know, take the light out from under the bushel. Shine your light. Share it with the world. You are here to do that, Divine Ones. You're guided every single moment of every single day. Connect in with that guidance. Know it to be true. And share who you are with the world. Thank you very much for tuning in with us. We'll see you next week. Now go get your divine on, everyone. Bye.
This episode of the Divinely Intuitive Business Show has been sponsored by the Divine Business Club, the only place where divine intuitives like you can get proven business building advice on how to get your sacred gifts out into the world and make the impact and the money that you want to make for less than $1 a day. For more information, go to www.divinebusinessclub.com.